Public Radio KMXT is supported by a grant from North Pacific Fuel, serving and continuing the tradition of excellent service to the community at three locations: Marine Dock at 715 Shelikoff Street, Gas & Go at the Y, and Gas & Go at Mill Bay.
It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station. We're broadcasting from up here on Signal Hill in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska. Well, we have partly cloudy skies, 59 degrees out at the airport, where they are registering 62% humidity, southerly winds to 12 miles per hour, and 10 miles of visibility. Mostly cloudy skies for today and tonight, southerly winds to 15, gusting to 20 today, coming down to 5 to 10 tonight. Look for a high of 58, which we are already beyond, and a low under 50 tonight, low of 47 tonight. Showers tomorrow and tomorrow night, mainly after 4 p.m. tomorrow. Southerly winds to 5, becoming completely calm tomorrow afternoon.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Amy Held. Ukraine is carrying out a counteroffensive in the east at a brisk pace. NPR's Jason Bobian reports troops are taking back towns in days that it took Russia weeks to capture.
A spokesman for the Ukrainian armed forces says their troops regained control of 20 towns and villages in and around the Kharkiv region over a 24-hour period. The spokesman says Russian troops hastily retreated deeper into Russian-held portions of Luhansk and Donetsk, and some retreated all the way back into Russia itself. Images on social media show Ukrainian soldiers putting up the yellow and blue Ukrainian flag on bombed-out municipal buildings that just a few days ago were occupied by Moscow's forces. Meanwhile, an official with Ukraine's Southern Military Command says that over the last 2 weeks, Ukrainian troops have retaken five villages and hundreds of square miles of territory from the Russians in the strategic Kherson region. Jason Bobian, NPR News, Lviv, Ukraine.
The U.S. Chamber of Commerce says a potential national railway strike would amount to economic disaster. Negotiations between unions and the nation's biggest freight railroads have been going on for years, and a cooling-off period ends Friday. If the two sides fail to come to terms then, the chamber is asking Congress to be ready to step in. Today, in a court filing, former President Donald Trump objected to the two special master candidates put forward by the Justice Department, his legal team saying he would provide the rationale for that if and when the court orders. Meantime, NPR's Carrie Johnson reports Trump's lawyers appear to be disputing whether the documents the FBI took from Mar-a-Lago are in fact classified.
Trump's lawyers say the ongoing criminal investigation is merely a document storage dispute that spiraled out of control. The Justice Department's investigating possible obstruction and willful retention of information related to the national defense. The FBI recovered more than 100 pages of material marked classified during its August search at Trump's Florida resort. But attorneys for the former president say those papers may not actually be classified, and they say Trump has a, quote, unfettered right to access presidential records. Federal prosecutors say the judge's order is doing irreparable harm to national security because it bars them from using classified material in the criminal probe. Carrie Johnson, NPR News, Washington.
Queen Elizabeth's coffin is due to be brought to London tomorrow, but today it's in Edinburgh, and NPR's Frank Langfitt was there to watch the royal procession make its way through the streets of the Scottish capital.
It was a moving scene in this Gothic city, a big black hearse carrying the oak coffin of Queen Elizabeth up the cobblestone street known as the Royal Mile, past turrets and spires. And on the sides, crowds 13, 14 deep, clapping somberly as the hearse passed. And behind the hearse walked the Queen's children. Frank Langfitt, NPR News, Edinburgh.
This is NPR News.
NPR News es presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The state's bycatch review task force is preparing its first recommendations. On a recent visit to Kodiak, Governor Mike Dunleavy said the group would make a series of preliminary proposals at its September 20th meeting in Anchorage.
We're looking at the science, we're looking at all kinds of data, we're looking at how people catch fish, genetics, et cetera, et cetera. But hopefully in September we will have some recommendations, preliminary recommendations.
The Alaska Bycatch Review Task Force was formed in November of last year to study bycatch, which is the incidental catch of non-target marine species, and its consequences in fisheries in state and federal waters. The group is composed of 13 members and divided into four subcommittees that have met monthly since January. Dunleavy said while September's meeting will include draft recommendations from the task force, he expects a final report sometime in November. A Dillingham hunter was mauled by a bear on Friday. Alaska State Trooper spokesperson Tim McSpain said in an email that 40-year-old John Castile was hunting up the Nooshigak River, 20 miles by air from Dillingham, when he was mauled. Castile's aunt, Marjorie Nelson, said Castile came upon the bear while moose hunting. The bear attacked, and Castile called out to his hunting partner, who shot and killed the bear. Castile's partner sent a satellite message requesting help, saying that Castile had injuries on his arm and leg. He was conscious, but couldn't move.
They had a nurse with them and other hunting parties that helped stabilize him and control his wounds. He stayed out in the wilderness for 4 hours, laying on the tundra. But, you know, those people, the hunting party that he was with, they started a fire and they tried to keep him warm and keep him conscious and awake until the helicopter came and got him. It was a rough Friday night for us.
It was dark by the time the helicopter arrived. Nelson said the group shot flares into the air to show their location. The helicopter took Castile into Dillingham.
The whole time, John was conscious. He was awake during this whole ordeal. And after they got him stabilized, cleaned up, they got a medevac out of Dillingham and sent him to Anchorage.
Castile has deep wounds on his leg and arm and was in the Alaska Native Medical Center's critical care unit over the weekend. Nelson says he went into surgery Saturday morning. It lasted for about 8 hours.
He's still in a lot of pain, but they're trying to manage that pain right now. He's pretty overwhelmed with, you know, what happened to him, and totally understandable. I can't imagine. I can't, you know, it's overwhelming to me.
She doesn't expect recovery to be easy and says Castile may have to undergo additional surgeries. Still, she says, the family is grateful to his hunting partner and thanks everyone for their prayers. Sitka's voting machines were put through their paces recently. The testing is a routine part of preparing for Election Day that usually occurs behind the scenes in the municipal clerk's office, but this year took place in public. KCAW's Robert Woolsey attended the tabulation testing and filed this report.
When it goes through and it shows an overvote, because we're testing, we'll cast it through.
Sitka has two voting precincts, each equipped with a Dominion voting machine. Sitka's election official, Municipal Clerk Sarah Peterson, is huddled over one of the machines with Deputy Clerk Jess Earnshaw and Administrative Coordinator Holly Dennison. They're making sure the voting machines record all the properly marked ballots and alert officials if there's a problem. In this case, an overvote. The machine gives the voter the option of reviewing their work or starting again with a fresh ballot.
So they would look at it, and the voter would decide if they've made maybe a mistake.
An overvote means if it's like choose only one, you voted for two or something.
Yes. So this one, for example, this test ballot, vote for no more than one. So this person's voted for two.
Right.
If we do cast it, that race won't count for that individual.
Peterson and her team test the machines with both regular ballots and absentee ballots, although they'll stock the voting booths in Sitka with their preferred pen, a type which doesn't bleed through a double-sided ballot. They'll test other pens and pencils on the ballots. They'll make sure all the candidates are listed, all the ballot questions, and that everything is set to zero. Oddly enough, despite the high-powered software in play, the results are printed out on paper, like the cash register receipt at the grocery store, and signed by all the officials in the room. This is the routine legwork of election officials in clerks' offices, high school gyms, and city libraries across the country, but it's the first time in Sitka that it's been conducted in front of an audience. No one suggested that Sitka's elections haven't been accurate. Peterson, though, is staying out in front of any complaints.
There is added scrutiny, and I wanted to just, even at the local level, if I can ease concerns. And logic and accuracy testing has been done for years and years and years, and I've been in the clerk's office for 15 years, and every year we do it in the clerk's office, two of us, but I felt if I could ease some concerns, even at the local level, I would do it in public.
There are three of us in the audience at Harrigan Centennial Hall for the testing, and it is interesting. This is the first time I've noticed the Dominion brand on the side of the machines. The company has filed two lawsuits against Fox News and its parent company for defamation following the 2020 election, when former President Trump claimed the election had been stolen. Fox News propagated that claim despite its being tested and failed in 61 separate court cases between the November election and President Biden's inauguration in January. After Dominion filed its $1.6 billion suit, however, Fox News backpedaled quickly. Although many expect the case will go to trial and that Fox will argue that it was merely reporting the assertions of the president rather than supporting false claims that would have a devastating impact on Dominion.
So it's got Sitka 22.
But that seems far away from this meeting room in Sitka, where three election officials are spending the afternoon making sure local voters have their say this coming October 4th. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
And then it's got for precinct, that's the numeric.
LGBTQ people are more likely to experience domestic and sexual violence. And that's especially true for queer people of color, people with disabilities, and bisexual and transgender people. Now there's a group in Juneau that provides support for LGBTQ people who have survived trauma. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry reports.
One key difference for LGBTQ abuse survivors is that they are less likely to recognize domestic violence as abuse. Meryl Connolly Chu from Juneau's domestic violence support organization, AWARE, says that's because it doesn't fit the stereotypical image people have of what abuse looks like in heterosexual relationships. That's why AWARE is hosting Spectrum, the only queer-specific support group that serves people in Juneau who've experienced trauma. Connolly Chu says the group discussion focuses on the effects of trauma, not the traumatic experiences themselves.
Chloe and I do this because we are queer people who have experienced, you know, various trauma in our own lives. I think it's what makes it work so well. Like, we're all coming from it with some shared lived experience.
Chloe Kavanaugh is the other facilitator of the group. She and Meryl have hosted two sessions of Spectrum together so far.
We're kind of discussing it together and learning with people and learning from people in a way that isn't necessarily giving advice, but it's just sharing our different lived experiences and what that's been like and being in this community.
Connolly Chu said some of the most common hang-ups new group members have are about belonging.
I often get asked, like, am I queer enough for this queer space? Is my trauma, like, bad enough for this trauma support group? I get asked that almost from everyone who, like, calls.
Kavanaugh says Spectrum prioritizes confidentiality and safety because Juneau is a small city.
So you're knowing that you're going into a space where we're all committed to confidentiality and uplifting each other, and you know who's going to be there.
Spectrum is a free in-person program that lasts 12 weeks, starting September 29th. For more information, call AWARE or visit ktoo.org. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry.
Ketchikan's Borough Assembly postponed a discussion about raising the local sales tax cap until after next month's municipal election. The topic will appear again as an item on the agenda at the October 17th meeting. KRBD's Reagan Miller reports.
The meeting brought discussion about how urgent the need to raise the sales tax cap is in order to bring in more revenue, and whether that discussion should wait until the borough has its policy session in January. That also would be when newly elected members are seated on the assembly. The ordinance would raise Ketchikan's single-unit sales tax cap from $2,000 up to $12,000. It wouldn't apply to residential rent. That's capped at $1,000. The ordinance was introduced by Assemblymember Judith McQueary. She said the city has been discussing sales tax topics, and she thinks it's time the borough does the same.
The city has made moves for sales tax reform, and I think it's reasonable that the borough also have a chance to amend and discuss and decide what we would like to do about sales tax reform.
The introduction came after the assembly asked staff in July to create a proposal with a goal of leveling Ketchikan's sales tax cap with other Southeast towns. Assemblymember Grant Echohawk said he could see why the increase would be necessary and expressed concern with a deficit of the local education fund. He also said he's comfortable with an incremental increase instead of a one-time $10,000 hike.
If we do end up postponing it or not, or voting it down, I think it's still important that we have the discussion and speak to why we're even having this discussion. And it is an issue that has been building for several years now. That our local education fund is needs some kind of funding.
Assemblymember Austin Otos commented that the borough might look at bringing up the cap to just $4,000 instead of $12,000. He said that might soften the increase for local customers and merchants. The assembly's discussion turned to whether the ordinance should be postponed until a later meeting. Jeremy Bynum recommended that option.
I sit here and I'm very uncomfortable with us having a hypothetical question.
He also argued that the topic is more suited to January's policy session.
I feel like we're going a roundabout way of skirting a policy session to talk about what our real objectives and goals are for taxing, what those taxes are going to be used for.
Borough Mayor Rodney Dial expressed support for waiting. He wanted the whole assembly to be meeting in person and thought the new members could get their feet wet with the issue. Otos disagreed, calling the idea of waiting a weird fixation.
I will support this. I just don't get our weird fixation on waiting for the next body to come forward. I'm perfectly happy doing this in the next public hearing when there's a full body here, but we're the currently elected body. I just don't get why.
Ultimately, after a presentation of sales tax receipts, the Borough Assembly decided to postpone the discussion until a meeting scheduled for October 17th. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
Two master carvers from Sitka are at work on totem poles for Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's Totem Pole Trail, planned to go up in Juneau next year. In the third of a three-part series, KRBD's Reagan Miller reports on work being done by Tommy Joseph and Nicholas Galanin.
Tommy Joseph was just finishing up carving a canoe when Rosita Worrell from Sea Alaska reached out, asking if he'd be interested in carving a pole for the Juneau Trail.
They wanted me to do a pole representing all of the eagle clans, all the eagle moiety.
Joseph got to work in Sitka, sketching out his vision for the pole.
Yeah, I'd given them, like, I think, overall four different renditions because I had it way too complicated at first and needed to loosen up a bit and reduce some of it. And so we did that a few times, and after the fourth rendition, they agreed on it, and so made them their model.
He's been working with two apprentices on the project, and he says it's coming along on schedule.
We're cruising along in amidst all the tourists. Crazy year for tourists, huh?
Joseph says he thinks Sea Alaska's vision for the project is ambitious. He doesn't remember anything like it being done before.
So that's a lot of different styles, interpretations, and whomever the person is that's behind keeping all this organized and track with all 10 carvers and all that is, I wouldn't want their job, but I think it's quite amazing what's happening now.
Meanwhile, another Sitka carver, Nicholas Galanin, is at work on a pole representing the Kagwantan clan. He has more than 20 years' experience in customary arts and carving. He says the trail is probably the first time in more than 40 years that there's been so much carving going on in Southeast.
I think it's going to be really important to all of these communities. I think it would be amazing for these artists that are apprenticing and getting to work on the project. Hopefully, you know, in the continuum of this type of work.
Gallinan's working with two apprentices, his cousin, Lee Burkhart, and a longtime mentor, Will Burkhart.
Hopefully, some of these apprentices on these projects will be able to lead, you know, their own totem poles on this down the line.
SHI's ultimate goal for the trail is to raise 30 poles along Juneau's waterfront. So far, 10 have been commissioned and funded by Sea Alaska with a grant from the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
Read diverse, read indie on Insight Daily Radio. Conversations with today's most influential authors from the world of independent publishing. Kiyomi O'Connor's book, A Sky of Infinite Blue, A Japanese Immigrant's Search for Home and Self, explores her trying childhood in Japan and her journey as she emigrates to the United States. The book follows her through her travels, falling in love with her future husband, only to lose him after 2.5 decades to cancer, and navigating grief and unresolved trauma. She also discusses how, after many years of struggle and searching, she finally found the love and light that existed within her all along. We spoke with her about this most personal story.
My book is about my spiritual journey, me being a survivor of various tragedies, and ultimately finding the light that had been within me all along. So I was, from the beginning, I was filled with emotional traumas. I had an adulterous father, overly reliant mother, and dismissive extended family. And then my trauma went up to my 20s. So to escape that darkness and a difficult life in Japan, I left for United States to work as a researcher and starting new life.
That's Kiyomi O'Connor on her new book, A Sky of Infinite Blue, A Japanese Immigrant's Search for Home and Self, which has just been released. Read Diverse, Read Indie is presented by the Independent Book Publishers Association.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Monday Island Messenger. It is the 12th day of September, the year 2022. The sun rose at 7:33 today. It will set again at 8:36. That will give us 13 hours and 2 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 55 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was 33 degrees, set in 1987 and 1992, and our record high was 74 degrees, set in sunny 2018. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up. That will happen at 4:06 this afternoon here on the east side and be 9.3 feet. Followed by a low tide at 10:14 this evening of -0.3. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 4:34 this afternoon and be 15.4 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 10:53 this evening of -0.8. Let's check in with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 36, date issued 10 a.m. on September 7th. There will be a 54-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Saturday, September 10th until 6 p.m. Monday, September 12th in the following areas. In the east side Kodiak district, except for the inner Ugak and outer Ugak Bay sections remain closed. The outer Aikulik, Halibut Bay, Sturgeon, and outer Karluk sections of the southwest Kodiak district, in the central and north Cape sections of the northwest Kodiak district. As previously announced, fishermen are reminded that until further notice, in that portion of the northwest and southwest Kodiak district south of a latitude of Cape Kuliak, King salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse and gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations and statistical charts. Harvest strategies and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record-a-phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. And this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Mariners, here is your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side. Small craft advisory through tonight. South, 25 knots today, seas to 9 feet. For tonight, southwest, 20, seas to 8 feet. And for tomorrow, southwest, 15, seas to 6 feet. For Wednesday, west, 20, seas to 7 feet. And for Thursday through Friday, southwest, 20, seas to 8 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, south, 20 today, seas to 7 feet. For tonight, south 20, seas to 6 feet, subsiding to 4 feet after midnight. And for tomorrow, southwest 10, becoming southwest 20 in the afternoon, seas 3 feet, building to 5 feet tomorrow afternoon. For Tuesday night, west 20, seas to 5 feet. And for Wednesday through Thursday in the Shelikof, southwest 15, seas to 5 feet. Meetings coming up in the Kodiak Island Borough include tonight's Consolidation Committee regular meeting. That's happening in the Borough Conference Room at 6:30 p.m. On Wednesday, the Planning and Zoning Commission will be having a work session, also in the Borough Conference Room. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. And on Thursday at 6:30 p.m., the Assembly will be having a regular meeting in the Assembly Chambers. Things are happening at the Kodiak Public Library. Join September's Reading Challenge, focusing on NASA's Artemis program. Read 600 minutes and complete activities focusing on 5 aspects of getting to the moon and beyond. Come in and check out some of the new books about the moon and the stars. It's geared toward youth ages 6 through 12. Register on Beanstack at kodiak.beanstack.org. And tomorrow is the next Beehive Check. It happens at 1 p.m. Space is limited to 15 people outside. Call to reserve a good spot with a beekeeper at 486-8686. On Wednesdays, the library offers Lego Club. Children under 10 should be accompanied by an adult. That happens at 3:30 p.m. on Wednesdays. Thursdays, 10:30 in the morning, the library hosts a Lap-Sit story time for babies 0 to 3 and their adults. Join volunteer Abby Hanna to share a story and a song with some quality time to play and socialize. And this Thursday is the library's next chess club meeting. Drop in to learn, practice, or sharpen your chess skills in a cozy, friendly environment. No experience is necessary, and it's open for all ages. Kodiak Public Broadcasting Corporation invites you to our annual meeting and open house. It's happening this Friday, September 16th. The open house starts at 5:30, and the meeting will be broadcast on KMXD starting at 6:17 p.m., right after the Alaska Fisheries Report. Again, that's this next Friday. Coming up this weekend, free electronics recycling event. For all those electronics you have piled up in some corner of your house, bring them this 16th and 17th, that's this weekend, at the St. Hermers Harbor, right just to the right of the public boat launch. That's happening from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. this weekend. And you're welcome to bring microwaves, toasters, laptops, computers, phones, tablets, radios, DVD players, televisions, printers and copiers, faxes, faxers, cables and wires, fluorescent bulbs, even lead-acid batteries. But please don't bring large appliances, no smoke alarms or scrap metal, no household batteries or ballasts, no medical equipment, and nothing that contains liquids, please. Starting next Monday, early voting for our local election. You can early vote right at the Assembly Chambers, located at 710 Mill Bay Road, right up here by the high school and the radio station. Early voting is similar to when you go to vote at your polling precinct on Election Day. At the time you vote, your eligibility is verified, and you're given a ballot to feed into the voting machine. And your early voting ballots are counted and included in the unofficial tally on election night. So they encourage everyone to take the advantage of the option to vote early as soon as you pass by the assembly chambers. And that's between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. starting next Monday. If you have any questions, call the city clerk's office at 907-486-8636.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT two times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181. Fax us at 486-2733 or email psa@kmxt.org.